I could literally copy and paste the same discussion that I have with brands on Zoom calls or emails or meetings, and it will be the same chat for the past 3 years, where it's like, we just think it shouldn't have the word, you know, queer on it, or it shouldn't have queer rights on it. But could you do like a little rainbow and a unicorn? And it's one of those cases where a lot of brands want to make your queerness palatable for their demographic because they want to make it commercial. And I recently said on a call to a brand, I don't think the words commercial and pride should ever be in the same sentence.
When it comes to your career, there isn't one formula for success. And some of the best stories I've heard didn't follow a plan. That's why I've created this podcast. In each episode, I'll share an inspirational career story and introduce you to the amazing person behind it. I'm Steve, and welcome to the My Career Story podcast.
Right, okay, welcome back to the My Career Story podcast with me, your host, Steve Keith. And this week's guest is Dom Evans. Hello, how are you?
Hello, how are you, Steve?
I am good, thank you. It's nice to hear another northern voice.
No, it's soothing, isn't it? It's warming. It's like a cup of tea in your ears.
In your ears?
Yeah, like soft and warming and home.
Lovely.
Steve's like, anyway.
Yeah.
See your career story. Let's just go straight to that. Have you got a job in the first place?
So Dominic Evans, Dominic, is a freelance illustrator and merman based in London, from Bolton, there's that northernness, via Narnia. Well, this is going to be fab, isn't it? He loves to create work that makes you feel empowered, confident, and all warm and fuzzy inside. Recurring themes in his work are LGBTQ+ rights, mental health awareness, body positivity, drag and girl bands. Can't resist drawing a Little Mix video, Luke. Check out the Instagram, it's amazing. Throughout his years illustrating, Dom has created art for Little Mix, Cheryl, Ai Wei, The X Factor, Selfridges, Skinny Dip, Emma Watson's Our Shared Shelf, and more. Is Our Shared Shelf that one where she drops library books around places? I was actually getting that wrong.
Yeah, she does.
Yeah. I got one of them at one point. I can't remember what book it was.
It's an Insta book club.
All right, okay, cool. He was also the official illustrator for RuPaul's Drag Race UK season 1 and for Little Mix, The Search. I still haven't watched that yet. Is that bad?
Little Mix, The Search? Oh, yeah. It's banging. It's great.
Okay, don't cut me off for not watching that. Something he still pinches himself about daily. So Free to Be Me, an LGBTQ+ journal of love, pride and finding your inner rainbow, is his third book and is published by Penguin Random House UK. Illustrated and written by Dom, it's a love letter to the LGBTQ+ community and to the reader. And to let you know, wherever you are on your rainbow journey, this book will be there for you and be your safe space.
Yay!
Dom's also lucky enough to feature in Cosmopolitan, Gay Times, Glamour, BuzzFeed and Time Out. Like, we've got a lot to talk about, haven't we? So I'm going to let you go. What's your career story, Dom?
My career story is the roof is up. I can't draw for shit. It's not me. I hire someone to do everything.
The end.
I'm trying to think of a good starting point that will go around the houses. I've always loved drawing. That when I was younger, I used to love drawing Disney princesses. I was obsessed with drawing Disney princesses, so much so I used to draw Cinderella, but I'd give her like 12 pairs of feet because I love drawing the shoes, and she was like this human centipede illustration at like 10 years old, and people were like, does this child like need help, because all I drew was just like princesses. Like, you know, I remember going to the doctors and there's lots of drawings, and they're like, my mum's like, he does a lot of colourful stuff. And the doctor was like, And I think he was thinking in his head, like, he's gay. He's all like hot pink and things. But yeah, I think when I first got into illustration, and I think my career story is very, in a way, I'm a bit of a late bloomer compared to other illustrators. So I went to Manchester Met and did illustration there. And I chose illustration because originally I was going to do fashion design, but I cannot sew for shit. So if it was Drag Race, I wouldn't even get an episode one. I'd be done. I used to staple garments together. The worst thing I've ever done. The best garment I ever made was a Jurassic Park Dilophosaurus inspired outfit, which to this day, no one's done since. Anyway, So I did. I was going to do fashion design, and I just thought, you know what? I prefer the illustration side of it. I love drawing figures and I love drawing people.
Mm.
So I applied to my Met, and I didn't actually think I'd get in. And then I got in there, and we did 3 years there. But this was at a time before Instagram and Twitter didn't exist yet. And MySpace had just died out, and everything was on Facebook. That was like the time it was in. So it was like 2005.
Yeah, that's bad.
So I remember going to uni, and I just remember uni on this course. I think there were so many different things happening with our year group over the 3 years. There was different tutors coming in and different people running it. No one really knew what the hell they were doing. So by the time I got to the end of your degree show, I'd done loads of art, but all my art was like heavily gothic inspired. So I don't actually show it a lot on Instagram, but it was like skulls, blood, death. Imagine like the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills meets a funeral via Bram Stoker, right? Bram Stoker Vanderpump. That was kind of the vibe. And people were like, oh, we like it. What the fuck is that? So that was what happened. So that was uni, right? And then I finished it. And I think in my head at the time, because you know what, freelance illustration was known, but you normally had in-house illustrators for things like magazines or publications or books or websites. You still had a few freelance illustrators, but there wasn't really any success stories.
Yeah.
And I remember at uni being told, because I was normally always like pretty much like the only homosexual. So I remember being told my work was too colourful. I remember someone came in for a very large illustration agency, shall we say, and they looked at my portfolio and took all my work out, and they were like, you'll never get anywhere with this work. They were like, your work's too costumey, it's too fashion, no one uses fashion illustrators anymore, your work's not commercial, it's going nowhere, basically. So I was like, cheeky cow. And then secondly, I was like, I bloody love with this work. But I also think with illustration, it's very commercial as to what styles are in. It's very trend driven in some areas.
Yeah.
So then I was like, oh, what do I do? So I had this, I think there's that weird limbo bit where you leave uni, all your friends have moved away, and then you're like, shit, I'm in the real world. Like, I'm actually in the real world. I don't know what to do. I'd like, oh my God, I'd like loads of debt. I was skin. I'm not from a family with loads of money either. So like, it was one of those where I was like, right, I need to work and make some dollars. So I went full-time in retail. I've been in retail at this point for a few years. In total, I did 14 years in retail.
Okay.
So, hon, if you ever need shoes ordering, you need leggings selling, I can do it for you.
Awesome.
I did visual merchandising for 3 years full-time because I needed to like be creative somehow. But then you can only be creative so much in a shop.
Yeah.
For 3 years, it got to a point where I was getting really ill. I was working 5 a.m. in the morning to like 7 at night some days. I was exhausted. And when you've done 7 of those shifts in a row, I had like no energy. And I remember I got really sick and got laryngitis and tonsillitis at the time. Double whammy.
Nice.
And at the time, I had this moment where I had this big wet tea towel on my face because I was so hot. My mum just shoved it on my face. I was like, rah, rah, rah. I remember thinking, you know what? I want to make illustration work. So I'd not really taken on any gigs in those 3 years. I'd not drawn 3 years. I'd lost a lot of confidence. I just didn't think, as sort of like a queer artist, there was any space for me anywhere. Like, I didn't see any queer books out there. I didn't see any big queer illustrators really doing it, aside from like, you know, the massive ones that everyone knows. So I decided to apply to Brighton Uni and do a master's there, and I did not think I would get in whatsoever. And it was like, the demand to get in there was huge. I remember taking out a loan to go because I was like, we had to pay the fees. And it was the year before David Cameron put up all the fees.
Yeah.
So I had it at a bargain price one time only. So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to do it. And I got in, which I didn't expect at all. And I think, again, I was probably, there was like one or two of us, about the whole like 35, 40 of us. I was pretty much like the only sort of queer person doing like queer stuff. I had a calendar of girls allowed in the studio. Everyone was like, what? But when I went to Brighton, I moved there. I didn't know anyone. I just thought, I need to go there and make an effort of it. And I think by this time I was like 25, 26. So I moved there and I was like, I'm going to go to every single workshop or seminar or anything that is on. I need to learn as much as I can. And that was amazing. Doing this master's actually really helped me. It helped me just kind of get my groove back, with what I wanted to do. And I learned loads of different types of illustration. I actually learned about Photoshop because we weren't really taught it on our MedMet 3-year degree course. So I was there like, there's someone else there from MedMet. And she was like, yeah, I didn't get taught Photoshop either. So it was one of those things where all that, like, I know people now who are 25 who are smashing it and getting loads of brand deals. But back at this time, Instagram had just been released as well. Yeah. So it was a time where, like, you didn't have a platform to get work. So yeah, you just had to know people or be really, you know, sort of out there and passionate and go up to them in the middle of an event and be like, hi, I'm Dom. Anyway, so did this whole Brighton, are you bored yet, by the way?
No, I'm fine.
All right,
fine.
Okay, I'm just checking.
Does my face look bored?
No, I just like to check on people.
Sometimes I'm alive, don't worry, yeah, I'm listening. Yeah,
on the phone to my dad, like, Frankie, away. He's like, yeah, guys. So basically then when I was in Brighton, one of the master's course was sequential illustration, which I loved. I'd always wanted to do a book. Mm. And at the end of the course, you had to do something that had like a story or a journey or a narrative. And the amount of talent on that master's degree, we all still speak to each other, but like people were just phenomenal. There's an amazing illustrator called Sophie Henn that came out of it. She's got loads of books out with like Puffin and Scarlett Salmon and Schuster, and she's incredible. And it was one of those where I was like, shit, like everyone here is amazing. But in my head, I was like, I don't feel like I fit in because no one's doing like rainbows and gays and drag queens. So I remember doing a book called Map My Heart, and it was just done as like a tester book. Originally, it was called Batter My Heart. Proper northern. And it was basically about, it was like an interactive journal, and it was about breakups, relationships, and dating. And right, it was just meant to be something that if you were depressed or sad, you could work through it and blah blah blah. And that was my end of year big final project. So that was at the degree show, which was quite interesting because it was literally opposite a massive project about death as well. So it was sort of like my project was there, like, you know, you're amazing, live your life, and then it was like death. And it was interesting because my project was hidden right at the very back of the degree show, which I'd done myself over because, you know what, Steve, I organised the degree show and where everybody went, and I shoved myself in the back corner, shoved everyone else in front of me. I did a drag race, okay?
I was literally going to say, I
put myself last in the line for the stand-up challenge. So
yeah, you've looked at it and gone, right, the roast, where am I going to go? Yeah, the worst.
Yeah, I'll go at the end. Anyway, I did all this, and I got an email one day, and it was my first ever illustration job, and I'll never forget it. It was this amazing woman called Ellie who worked at Bright Museum and Art Gallery opposite, and they were like, we love your work, we'd love you to design our posters for us. And I was like, oh my God. I was like, this is huge. And it was a massive thing. I was like, I'd never had a freelance gig like that. Mm-hmm. And they were like, our budget's like £150. And I was like, oh my God. Oh, nowadays, I'd be like, what the... 100 and what? To spend weeks on a poster. So I remember for like a season, a whole year, I did Bright Museum and Art Gallery posters, which was like really lovely. And that kind of got me into my way of thinking. Anyway, so I left my master's degree with this book that I'd done, this prototype book. I self-published it. Uh-huh. I just spent £200 getting loads of copies printed, and I sold them as well. Like, I sold them at the show. And then I went and pitched to publishers, and I got so many no's, it was like off the chart, loads of them, not even reply sometimes, but just like, no, you don't have enough portfolio, you don't have a platform. I just joined Instagram. I hadn't joined Instagram yet. So I had like zero going on. I had a Facebook page with like five people, including my mum. So there was like loads of people saying no. And then I went and spent £20 on this website called My Perfect Pitch by this guy called Brian. And he was like, I'm an amazing author, and I got a book deal with a huge publisher, and this is what you need to do. And I spent the £25, and you know what? He was bloody right. He said, don't send a cover letter with 25 paragraphs on it. He was like, just write two sentences. This is my book about treasure hunting, or whatever it was. It will apply. It's similar to these books on treasure hunting out there and these books. The target audience are people who like Antiques Roadshow, Time Team, blah, blah, blah. If you'd like to see sample spreads, let me know. I did that within an hour, got a reply off someone who paid me off already. Got another reply, and I was like, and it was honestly the best money I've ever spent. And from that, I got my first book deal. And I remember at the time, Brighton, I finished up in Brighton. I was there about a year and a bit. And then I moved to London and I was only there for 3 months in Leighton. But I was like, I was living in my friend's sister's attic. And I remember thinking, I'm not leaving until I get a book deal or a permanent illustration job. But again, at the time, a permanent illustration job just didn't exist anymore. Like, no magazines like had a need to have an illustrator on tap to do all like editorial stuff. So then I got this deal. So I moved back to Bolton and I lived with my parents 3 years, going up to about 29. In those 3 years, I worked part-time back at the shop that I'd left, DMVM, because I kept a part-time job till about 2.5 years ago. So I kept that. And then this book came out and it did good. It went into Urban Outfitters. It ended up going into Topshop, which was amazing because it was with a very small publisher. Then I did a second book. They asked me for another deal and I was like, holy shit. And this one was called Map My Style, which was all about women's wear fashion. Because at the time I was working in retail, selling up my huns. And we did that. And that sort of like, that did great too. That ended up in Urban Outfitters and Topshop and other places. Mm-hmm. It went to like Selfridges, things like that. And it was quite funny because everyone thinks you make loads of money off books, but you don't. So, but for me, it was just amazing to work on these projects and to really, I thought, you know, I remember thinking in my head, like, I'm finding my niche, but I still don't know if I'm there yet.
Yeah.
So these books came out, but I was still working part-time. I was trying to make ends meet. I was trying to have some sort of profit. And then my friend texted me and said, Dom, we've got a spare room in London, in Dalston, going. It's like, whatever, 600 all in. And I remember texting my friends at the time who lived in London, my best mates, like, is this a good deal? And they were like, yes, like straight away. And I was like, all right, okay. So then I moved to London and I transferred from the warehouse in Manchester Arndale to Argyle Street. I rang them up and I went, hi, I've got any vacancies. I need a job, work at Arndale. And they were like, yeah, sure. Moved to London, Argyle Street, and worked there part-time. I think at the time it was like 20 to 12 hours a week. Mm. And then I was like, right, I really need to push myself. And in the meantime, in 2015 or 16, I joined Instagram and I started doing like little posts and things and artwork and bits like that. Mm. And while I was in London, I thought, while I'm here, I have to make this work. I gave myself a year and I was like, if I get nothing back and no one bites, I'm GCing it. I'm done. I'm going. So I ended up working a warehouse and meeting amazing friends there and doing personal shopping there over the years. And then also I ended up taking loads of little gigs. I did loads of like live illustration events where I'd go to like Selfridges or John Lewis or Harrods and sit there for like 5 hours and draw people. And I kept getting those in. And I think at the time I didn't have a lot of Instagram followers, like from 2015 to 2018, but I had really good word of mouth because people knew that I was good to work with. I could turn up, I'd draw people, I was friendly, I'd chat to them whilst I draw them. Anyway, then I had a follow on Instagram of someone called Lauren, who was a literary agent. And I was like, oh my God, because in my head, I'd wanted to get another book done. I had all these ideas. I was told that my other books weren't commercial enough anymore, pretty much.
Right.
And I was like, oh my God, like, am I just like not meant for this life? So I messaged her and just DM'd her outright. And I thought, I don't know if this is like the etiquette of what you do with a literary agent, but I just messaged her on Instagram and said, hi, I'm Dom. I see a literary agent and I've got some really good ideas for A, B, C, D, and E. And, you know, if you want to meet, but if you don't, that's cool too. Like, sorry. And she was like, yeah, like, if you've got some ideas, let's meet up. And I remember meeting her in November 2017. And I took three ideas there. One of them was very gothic art, because I think in my head, I didn't really know where I sat. One was gothic art, one was queer, which was ended up being Free to Be Me, and one was about fashion. And we went with the Free to Be Me one. She was like, this is developing. She went, because queer publishing, there isn't enough out there, and this is something that I think will help a lot of people.
Mm.
And we ended up getting a deal 6 months later with Penguin. And the whole time I did Free to Be Me, and the whole time, literally like a few months before it came out, I was working at Warehouse as well. So I'd literally go from doing massive events with like celebrities and stuff to going in the next day at like 8 a.m. and like selling blouses, pencil skirts, leggings, sometimes being called the C word by customers, not getting a lunch break, being really busy, running off my feet, and then going home and then doing artwork for like Emma Watson or something. It was like mind blowing. Sorry for the sirens, Dalston. And that happened. And then after that, eventually, I was waiting for that to go past. After that, eventually, I left warehouse because I was like, you know what, I really need to like make more. I need to make more money. I need to drive more sales. And slowly, I kept getting more work in. And I think as well, at the same time, Instagram, the way it was going, I was doing a lot of work. I was like illustrating, like, you know, Little Mix or queer icons. And if people reposted it, then I'd get more followers, and then brands would see it. And I remember one really big point was when I worked at the X Factor, I got asked to go there to illustrate for their live shows. And I illustrated Cheryl, ended up meeting Cheryl, thanks to lovely people that I was with. She put the picture up on Instagram and I got offered work off Selfridges and Harvey Nichols in the same week. But it's one of those where I was like, what? Like, my jaw was on the floor, like, what? So anyway, Free to Be Me came out. It did way better than I thought. We sold like triple more than we thought we would do in the days it came out. And it really helped a lot of people. And then from that, I think more people and brands started to notice me and approach me for things. And since then, I probably learned the most about illustration in the past 2 years that I have, because I think there's so many brands that approach you to do LGBTQ plus work, but it's how they want you to do queer art. So it's not, you know, we want, and I could literally copy and paste the same discussion that I have with brands on Zoom calls or emails or meetings, and it will be the same chat for the past 3 years, where it's like, we just think it shouldn't have the word, you know, queer on it, or it shouldn't have queer rights on it, but could you do like a little rainbow and a unicorn? And it's one of those cases where a lot of brands want to make your queerness palatable for their demographic because they want to make it commercial. And I recently said on a call to a brand, I don't think the words commercial and pride should ever be in the same sentence if we're talking about images or products or anything that you want to sell. And I've worked with amazing brands that have got it and be like, no, do what you want, go with it. And I'm like, yes. And then there's other brands who are just, there's times when I've just walked away from it. I was like, you know, I'd rather lose the money, be skint for a few weeks than take the cash and feel like, you know, it doesn't fit my values or align with what I want to do.
Yeah, that must have been really hard. Like, I mean, it was hard on a number of levels. I think, like, I mean, I can feel like anger and frustration rising up in myself whilst you're talking about it. I just don't, the tokenism that is just around the rainbow, I mean, is just ridiculous. And even the word queer as well, it's a word that is just being reclaimed so positively by the LGBTQ plus community right now, that I've had conversations in the last couple of weeks with my own clients and things where it's been like, well, could we use LGBTQ plus instead? Or emails haven't gone through because of that word. Like, there's even blockers within technology.
The younger generation growing up, that TikTok generation, that is their term. Like, they have claimed that. And I've learned from them, you know, as Ruth says, you learn from the children. And I've learned from them in terms that, you know what, you're right. Because at first I was like, queer. I used to get called queer at school. I don't want to be called that.
Yeah.
But then actually I was like, no, it's a blanket. Because, you know, I think at the moment in society, we're deconstructing things about sexuality a lot. And the binary and gender and fluidity. And I think everyone's having realizations where, you know, they may not see themselves as cis anymore, or they may actually realize, you know what, I'm pansexual, I'm not gay, I'm actually, and I think it's one of those things where we do need labels for visibility, but also we don't need labels at the same time. It's like a weird
you're right. I find with the rainbow as well, that's what everybody is the go-to for visibility. And I look at it and go, right, okay, well, the rainbow flag itself is going through an evolution anyway, because there's the progress edition of it now with trans and with the black and the brown, with colours within it as well. But it's also a symbol that's deeply rooted within protest, riot, celebration of a community. And I call it, when I speak to people within recruitment, I call it kind of the slap a rainbow on it effect, where you just get a corporate logo in June and your effort to engage with a certain community and from a diversity and inclusion point of view is to use that rainbow and just 100%. Pinkwash it.
I think a lot of people think
that's enough.
No, yeah, you're right. I think people think that's because for me, I think if you're a brand or you're a corporate client and you're doing something for Pride, you're not doing it right if there's not a charity involved as well, and you're not at least donating a percentage of profits to something. And the thing is, like, there's still, it's still, you're still, I've still butted heads with clients because I'm like, I want the percentage to be this much. And they're like, yeah, but because of margins and profit, we can do this much. And there's constant conversations. And again, I've walked away from a lot of stuff and just like lost the dollar and luckily like been living out of like savings or whatever. And it's only, you know, it's only been the past year where I've actually started to make money. I think people think like I've got loads of money, but I'm not. It's been the past year I've actually been like, you know what? I'm anxious about money, but I'm not as anxious as I was 6 months ago. And I think it's a case of, for me, I have to remind myself that I'm always going to land on my feet. I try and remind myself of that because with work, especially around Pride time, it's so hard. And you do have a lot of value judgments you've got to make with brands. Some of them, you know, one a few weeks ago, I was just like, you know what, this isn't working. Like, I'm really sorry. I don't think this aligns with me. I don't want my name on it.
Mm.
I'm sad. They're like, yeah, but you know, oh, we're really sad to see you go. We don't want that. And I was like, well, you're not, none of you have taken on board what I'm saying. You don't want to work with a charity. You don't want to use any of the creators that I've passed on to you that are really important BIPOC queer illustrators. I was like, it just sounds like bullshit. I was like, it's a way. I said, because for me, I always want to try and, if I do something, I always want to try and platform other people that I think whose voices should be heard more than mine. And I think with some brands at Pride, they just want to do, like, I remember like last year, I got asked to do something for an Instagram account, record a video about Pride. And I said to them, it was totally unpaid, but I said, listen, I'll help you out, but you've got to make sure that everyone in this video, like, it's a diverse set of queer people. I don't just want to see white queer people. And they're like, yeah, yeah, of course. They put the video up. They didn't even send it to anyone to check off, to sign off before they've done it. The whole edit goes up and it's just 12 white gay people. And I messaged them like, you need to take this down right now. It looks horrific. I was like, you need to have other people. I can give you, I've already sent you a list of 20 people you could have used. So why are you not including these other people?
Mm.
And they're like, oh, we just didn't think. And I was like, it's just one of those things. I like to think things are getting better. And I will say the brands that I've worked with for Pride 2021 have really, really listened and like taken on board how they want to do things going forward and how they want to be authentic in the work that we're doing, which I've been really happy with. Because I don't say yes to all the work I get. If I'm offered stuff and someone's like, do you want to do this? I'd be like, you know what? I think there's other queer illustrators you could use that aren't me. Try all of these and I'll send it on. And I think the ones that I've managed to work with have been really good, but it's a struggle to get there. And also I think when you're a queer freelancer, it's hard to kind of like have that confidence to own your voice because you do get talked over a lot. You do get talked down. You have like straight lads being like, no, it's not like that. And like, you know, you've got all these things and you've got to be like, I'm not trying to kick off here, but I'm just saying you're going to get a backlash to what you're putting out. You won't get it off straight people because they won't see it, but the queer community, they're going to have shit to say. So I think it's hard when you're like that. And I think especially now, it must be difficult for a lot of queer creatives that are starting out with things like Instagram, because that whole algorithm's change. And it's not to blame everything on the algorithm, but it is harder to get your work noticed as much. It's harder for your work to grow as much in your account. And it's harder to get in front of the right eyes. So that's why I just constantly recommend loads of other people. I have this list that I send around all the time. Point where I think some people just think I'm a prick because I'm just like, here's a list of people, use them, they're more fitted to this brand, this product. You could do this with them. If you want me to jump on a call and discuss it with you, I can. But yeah, I don't know where that tangent was, but you know, I went off on one.
No, it's good.
I like, really got some stuff off my chest, Steve.
Like I'm like doing a therapy session with you.
Back in 1994.
No, it's like, it speaks to, I had one of the podcast episodes that I had a few weeks ago was with Vangelis, and he was talking about the fact that actually when you say no to work, he likes to see it as the fact that he's opened a door for somebody else. And so it's a really kind of difficult one to unpick, but I'm really like pleased to hear that you're having conversations with people like that, and that you've got the confidence to walk away if it's not the right thing for you. Because I think a lot of people would probably just go, oh, well, it's some money, so I'll do it.
Yeah, maybe. I think, because I think for me, I was having this chat with my friend the other day, and, you know, he's a Black Indian queer person. And I was like, whatever you do, I will never question you getting the coin. Like, whatever, you know what I mean? Like, whatever Pride campaign you do, I will never question you doing it, because I, you know, I struggle getting into the room, but you struggle getting to the door, because there's so many blocks and prejudices against things like that. And I've done it probably since about, I mean, even when I first started out, like, I remember I was asked to illustrate for a podcast around, I think it was like Black queer people. And I said, I'm not the right person for this. I was like, these are some people you could look at. I was like, but I'm not. They're like, oh, we could pay £500. And I was like, I'm just not. I said, I'm not comfortable doing this. I'm not the right, I'm not part of that community. I can't draw or speak for them. But I've always actively tried to push for other people to get in the room. But I think as well, it's difficult sometimes because brands are brands, aren't they? And, you know, I like, there's certain people now I recommend again and again and again. And I'm like, how have they not got a t-shirt deal or something? And some brands are like, oh, but we just want you. And I'm like, yeah, but it's not just about me. Like, I've literally only just got, I'd probably say, in my illustration career, kind of like properly establishing myself a bit now. Like, I still feel like I'm very new to it, and I'm learning a lot, but I feel a bit more of a seasoned queen, shall we say. I'm not ready for all stars, but, you know, do my drag race.
Ready for the crowd.
Ready for the crowd. But yeah, it is a bit of a, it is a bit of a shame that sometimes brands just can't recognize that. And I say to all brands, like, what have you done? If we're doing a Pride campaign, what else stuff have you done around LGBTQ plus? Because in the year, there's more stuff than Pride. There's Trans Awareness Day, and there's National Coming Out Day, and things like that. And there's something where they could just do an Instagram live with a LGBTQ plus creator, or a donation for something, or just something to raise awareness. And thankfully the brands that I'm working with have been quite vocal about LGBTQ plus this year, but it's a tough call. Like, it is a tough call at Pride, because as well, lots of creators say it, but, and I spoke to other illustrators about it, you just get people who are like, we need it by next week and we'll pay you £2,000, and in your head you're like, that's a lot of my rent covered for the next few months, and I'll feel safe. Also, I'm not the right person for this job, or I don't agree with this brand's values, or anything like that. So it's really difficult. I don't think people understand, like, the amount of, like, brain politics you've got to do to, like, be like, right, okay, no, maybe not, no, leave it, fine. And you know what, some brands, they'll never even just reply to you. You'll send a really nice worded email, you'll get sod all back, and then they message you again a year later, like, hi, I work for so-and-so, and we're casting for our Pride campaign. I'm like, oh, I remember you, Debbie. Remember me. Sorry, I've gone on such a rant today, Steve. You might have
to sit down.
I think you need to get this into a 20-minute chunk, hon.
So coming back to your illustration stuff, so your illustration work, sorry, not stuff.
It is stuff. Honestly. Call it what you want.
Like,
you can call it crap if you want. Don't mind.
I can imagine that doing the work that you do. I mean, I used to love art when I was at school as well, and it was a great form of escapism. Like, I would lose hours. How do you manage to work your way through that creative process and actually deliver for your clients? Like, do you ever find that you're spending too long on something and go, right, I need to hurry this up a bit? And does that impact on the quality of the work you produce?
I'm a bit of a, I might say, quite a fast worker. But
you look it when I see on your Insta and you're like showing like insights of you doing it. Like, my God, that'd take me like 5 hours to get to that point. You're just there like a it's like watching Tony Hart on an heart attack.
Like, I wish. Oh my God, I love Tony Hart. But yeah, I think sometimes for me, I need to, if a client comes to me with a brief, and like, yeah, we want it to be like Pride and this and this. And I'm like, well, you know, let's have a good conversation about this, hon, and get it proper. And then when we decide on a visual look, I think I need to have the idea, like that bing moment, that bing bang bang, where I'm like, this is what I want, right, I know what I'm doing now. Because everything I do, I always try and make it different to what maybe people have seen. Something that's fun, something that's engaging and uplifting. And aesthetically, I want it to be something that you can reuse and like hang on your wall or whatever. But it does, I think sometimes it takes me a while to get to the idea, but the physical drawing bit, once I've got the idea, I do it. Like I never, when people are like, can you send us rough mock-ups? I'm always like, no. Because I was like, what works better for me, excuse me, is to draw it all to final stage, then send it you. And it's probably the worst way to work, but I think that's how my head works. I need to see it in front of me visually, get an opinion on it, and then we're okay. And most of the time, I've never really had anyone be like, this is awful, start again. I've never had that, touch wood. 10 minutes later, Dom, this is awful, start again.
Well, I mean, from like a creative point of view as well, I've worked with agencies before and I've been that client that's kind of gone, could you just? And but I would have thought...
There's a compromise as well. Like, you do have to compromise with the client on a lot of things.
You do, but I can imagine from an illustration point of view, like, if you're relatively fast and you're doing a mock-up, that like, you're kind of, like, giving away your work for free in a way, like,
no one pays you.
Yeah.
Like, literally, the amount of times, like, recently for one brand, they asked for mock-ups. So I always, if they really, really want it and they're like, you have to have it, I will do the mock-up, okay? But when it gets to the fifth PDF of mock-ups I've done for them, and each PDF's 5 pages, and I'm like, I literally can't afford to put more time into this. Like, I do a lot of unpaid work as it is, like if I'm doing work for like charities or different little things like that. And I was like, I can't, babe's like, I don't have the time to put into this. So, and they're like, oh, well, we could pay you a development fee. And I'm like, yes. Because people don't offer to pay for mock-ups. Like, I think that's one thing where clients need to like learn to pay an illustrator just for their time, for the ideas. Because, you know, when I'm going on all these Zoom calls all day with different clients, and this job may not even happen, but the Zoom call's 2 hours and then the job never happens. They're paid to be on that Zoom call, their 9-to-5 job pay. I've lost 2 hours of work. I've lost money. But then when you have like 5 of them in a day, which I had a few weeks ago, and today I was like, all I've done for free is educate straight people at brands about Pride products, and nothing's come from it. And now the bonus is I've recommended loads of amazing talent for them to use, but the downside is I'm like, I've just spent all day doing nothing, basically. What am I doing? It's like that meme where it's like, I'm a clown. It's like, I could have put this in an email and recommended people. What am I doing? Yeah, you're right.
So I have asked guests this season to tell me a little bit more about their career story in the form of words that they would use to describe it, and a book title. So your book title that you gave me was Drawing Dom. Now, from the outset, looking at this and having heard the conversation we've had, like, it seems obvious, but was there any other thought behind Drawing Dom? Because I know there were some other words that fell out of your mouth at the start.
There was a strap line there, Steve, It should have been Drawing Dom, glitter, disco balls, and doodling. I could say something else, like glitter, disco balls, and dick, but I thought, no, it was like glitter, disco balls, and doodling, because then I think that's like the camp, fun, weirdness, all tied into one.
Yeah.
Because I think if it was a book about my career story, that is literally it. Because my career story is like, there's so many like stops and starts.
Is that what would be on the cover?
Yeah, just me doing this with a disco ball. But me sat on a disco ball with a disco ball on my head as a hat, drawing a canvas of a disco ball.
Got a really weird, like Miley Cyrus style image popping from my head.
Yeah, in like heels, and it'd be amazing. And I don't know, we could like rent a horse and it could be a unicorn, whatever. Could be next to me. And
you gave me camp, fun, and tenacious as the three words. You just referenced camp and fun there, and I can see that anyway. But where's tenacious come from?
Right, you know what? Tenacious actually came a few years ago. My friend was having a heart-to-heart to me over WhatsApp at 5 a.m.
As you do.
I just couldn't sleep. They were still out.
Oh, okay.
And they were like, I just want to say I admire your tenacity. And I was like, what did you call me? But then... I was like, excuse me, what? But then they were like, no, they're like, you're really proactive. And when you go out for something, even if you're not confident about it, you make an effort and you go out there to create work. And they were like, that's something I admire about you, because you take no for an answer, but then you'll try again. But you really want to make a change and do stuff. And that resonated with me, because I think I am very tenacious. Like, even in the pandemic, beginning of the pandemic, I lost all my work. In the space of a day, I lost everything. And then it got even worse, because work I was approached for due to the pandemic, I then lost that. Because budgets were being cut, or people wouldn't reply to me. I'd email someone at a brand and be like, oh, hi, I've not heard back off you. Have you got my invoice? And they're like, Susan's left now. This is Tony. And I'm like, okay, have you got my invoice? The budget's been pulled on this, but we don't need you to work for us anymore. And I was like, okay, that's why I invoice early now for everything. I invoice like the day I get the gig, because I'm just like, there's no point. You never know. So I remember that happened. And in the pandemic, I remember thinking, it was really interesting. I did a Q&A on Instagram recently, and someone actually said to me, how did you get all this work in the pandemic? And there was a tone of like, kind of like, what the fuck you. But also, I literally went out and pitched for everything, because I think if you're in a pandemic and you're freelance and you've got emails, you've got a network, or you've got people on Instagram that you could just message your brands, I was like, you know what, I need to create work for myself, which I've always tried to do anyway. Everything, pretty much 90% of my whole portfolio I've pitched for, which includes Drag Race. You know, I was approached for it by a woman that I used to personally shop for. However, they didn't know how they wanted the illustrations to look. They didn't know what they were going to do. So I put together a whole proposal, and they could have gone no, but they went, actually, we really like this pitch. I re-pitched for season two. I pitched for It's a Sin. I pitched for Little Mix Search. I pitched for book deals. And I think it's interesting, because no one sees all the no's I get. There's so many no's. There's tons and tons of no's, but the yeses they'll always see. And I think that's the one thing where maybe that tenacity comes in, because I always think, even when it's really bad and I'm getting a bit depressed, I'm like, I've made no money, I don't know what I'm going to do, I'm panicking. Then I'm like, you know what? I'm going to put a PDF together, hon, and I'm going to email it to people. And it worked, though. It did work. It helped me get money in the pandemic, which was amazing.
Yeah.
Very lucky to have that.
Mm. And you've got a new book coming out, haven't you?
I have. It's Drawing Dumb. I've got a new book coming out. This whole book was done in pandemic over three lockdowns. It's called Queer Power, and it's originally, I think when the publishers were looking at it, it was kind of going to be about a book about just like general icons in general who were fierce. But then I said, why don't we make it a mix of like really well-known LGBTQ plus, let's make it totally queer, and have LGBTQ plus icons, well-known ones like Billy Porter, or and like a famous ally like Lady Gaga or Jonathan Van Ness. But then also, I'd love to mix in some people that people may not know that I can platform and talk about. So there's people like Blair Imani, who's an amazing queer Muslim activist, or there is Adam Elliott, who's this amazing Jewish queer activist. And there's loads of people in there that readers can literally pick up the book, and on the icon spread their Instagram handles there, so they can pick up the book and follow them and follow their journey over the next few years, or help them grow their platform. So it was just my way of trying to like showcase all these people. And my biggest downside of it is I just couldn't fit in everyone. It was like, there's a limit on them pages for the gay books, honey. But I was like, I want 9,000 pages. And they were like, no. But you know, everyone's got a double spread. Everyone's on equal billing. You know, we've got people in there who have achieved amazing things, but no one really knows about them, next to, you know, Gaga. So it's like a mix of different people. And I was really conscious to make sure I represented as many different people from our community as I could do. And yeah, that comes out May 13th, a week today, Queer Power.
Amazing.
So it's at HarperCollins. It's available on bookshop.org, which helps support your local independent bookshops to pre-order, Amazon, Waterstones, WH Smith's, and the link is in my bio.
And it's also going to be in the show notes as well. There you go.
Hey, thanks, hon.
All right. So to wrap things up, Dom, what would be the career advice that you would give the lovely listeners?
So this is actually recycled career advice. This is two pieces of advice Okay.
Go on, I'll let you have to.
Advice I saw, Steve's off, fuck's sake. First advice I actually saw in a video, and it's an interview with Trixie Mattel off Drag Race in 2016. Right. I think she's just in a season. And they said, what's your career advice? And she said that Bianca Del Rio said to her, whatever you think you should be charging for your work, triple it. And that is what you say to a client. Because we constantly underestimate ourselves and our talent and what we bring to the table. So say that number in your head and then triple it. And I remember doing it the next day and I was so nervous writing this email. And the client were like, yeah, that's fine. And I was like, shit, this works. And then I just kept doing it. And I was like, oh my God, yes. So that was my first piece of career advice. And my second one was off this woman that I met on the way home from Manchester to Bolton on the night bus at 1 a.m. In 2017, just before I moved to London. She was really drunk. She told me she was casting for Downton Abbey season 3, and I had the perfect look for it. She was off her face. She's like, oh my God, you'd be so good at Downton. Can you act? And I was like, and she, it doesn't really matter. And I was like, okay. But she was chatting away to me, like, she couldn't stop talking. God bless her soul. She gave me an email that I think was fake, but she said to me, the best advice you should ever have in your career is, she was like, always be thankful, always be humble, and never think anything is beneath you. And I was like, you know what? Even though you potentially catfished me, this is very good advice, because it's true. I don't think, and you know, you've always got to be thankful for the work you get, and never think, try not to get too big for your boots, because I think that's where you start to lose who you are and what makes you, you know, what makes you happy and what drives you.
Yeah. So you're not starring in the Downton sequel that's coming out then?
No, I cracked a really good pun. I was like, oh, Downton Abbey. And she's like, no, darling, it's Downton Abbey. I was like, that's a joke. But she was, I mean, she was literally pouring out wine out of a handbag. She was having a great time. I don't know where she ended up, but she was great.
Probably in a gutter by the sound.
I still have her email, to be honest. So I'll have to, might chase her up.
Why not? Awesome. Great advice. So I'm going to go and sit and look at my rate card and triple it tonight then.
Yeah, triple it.
All right. Thank you for spending time with me today, Dom. It's been really great hearing more about you, and I've really enjoyed chatting as well.
Oh, thanks for having me and just listening to me rant for 9,000 minutes. I'm really, if you need to lie down after this and a cup of tea, I understand.
I'm actually about to go and make tea for my family. I'm going to try a moussaka tonight.
Hey, shit, early, aren't you?
Well, I've looked at the recipe before, and it's like 3 stages of like, do this, then do that.
Ah, right, okay, yeah.
So I'm going to go.
That's lovely that you're making that for them. That's nice.
Well, I think I'm not paying any rent, so I might as well do some to give back, you know?
Yeah, it's some moussaka. Yeah.
I'll do that. I'm going to go and bang some Kylie on and go and do that.
Yes. Oh, that sounds lovely.
Okay. Awesome. Right. Well, and thank you for joining today. And don't forget, share, subscribe, and review. And we'll be back with another guest next time. Bye for now.